Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody. We will keep covering the developments in Boston this hour as the news warrants, and also talk about some other things through the course of the day so we don't just repeat what you already know without any news like a cable channel. But we do start in Boston right now with WNYC's Fred Mogul, who is covering the story in Watertown, just outside of Boston, where the media is congregated and where most of this morning's events have taken place. And Seth Mnookin, MIT professor, science writer, who lives in Watertown and was an ear witness, at least, to some of today's events. Fred and Seth, hello from New York.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
Fred, what's the latest? Has the frenetic pace of events kind of slowed down after the shootout earlier today?
Well, I'm with the media group that's somewhat sequestered here in a mall parking lot, the Watertown Mall. We're awaiting the next update. It's been a couple hours since the last one from the governor and top police officials. So news is somewhat trickling in where we are. There's residential neighborhoods adjacent to this mall, a 20-block area of which they're still searching. They've been combing it now for hours. Some of the places they've been through, they're going through again. People who live there say that it kind of almost comes in waves. There's been a couple stretches where they've isolated a single house and surrounded it, and it seemed like maybe something would break and that they might be closing in on a suspect. But then, to our knowledge, they have not found him yet.
I want to read a little bit from the latest AP dispatch on the story, particularly with respect to these brothers who are the suspects and more that we're learning about them. They were identified by law enforcement officials and family members as Jokhar and Tamerlan Chernarev, brothers from a Russian region near Chechnya, which the AP says has been plagued by an Islamic insurgency that has carried out deadly bombings. They live near Boston and had been in the U.S. for about a decade, an uncle said. And, Fred, this is contrary to some of the earlier reports, which had said that they have lived in the U.S. for only about a year. So is anybody clarifying this for you, whether they've been here for a decade, these 19- and 21-year-olds, or only for about a year?
Well, some of our reporters at our fellow member station, WBUR, are by the Chernaev house in Cambridge, on Norfolk Street in Cambridge. They've talked to neighbors. In fact, one of the brothers was quite close friends with a nephew of one of the WBUR hosts. They were together at a prom party that WBUR host actually hosted some time ago. They've apparently been here at least 5 or 8 years. I've heard people say going back to 2008, going back to 2005. In fact, I take that back. There was a 2008 profile of the older brother, the one who's now deceased, 26-year-old Tamerlan Chernaev. He had been a boxer for representing the area for the Golden Gloves. He had Olympic aspirations. This was in an AP profile of him back in 2008. At the time, he said the story was profiled, we'll box for passport. He apparently, at least at that time, was on a different kind of visa, didn't have a passport. He told the reporter, I don't have a single American friend. I don't understand them. And again, he had been in the States for about 5 years at that point in 2008.
And the AP also apparently got a phone interview with their father, Anzor Chernaev. This is a telephone interview from the Russian city of Machachkala, and I may or Makhachkala, and I'm sure I'm mangling that name. Let's see. So he said Jokhar is a second year medical student in the U.S. He is such an intelligent boy. We expected him to come on holidays here. And in addition, the AP says the city of Cambridge announced 2 years ago that it had awarded a $2,500 scholarship to Jokhar, who was listed as a senior at Cambridge Ringe and Latin School, a highly regarded public school whose alumni, it adds, include Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and NBA star Patrick Ewing, none of whom have gone on to great academic accomplishments, but interesting anyway. But so Seth Mnookin, this is, you know, the kind of thing that maybe shouldn't be shocking to people, but will be shocking to many people to find out that those allegedly involved in something like this had aspirations and had accomplishments.
Well, I think one thing certainly that that we should be able to agree on after all of the different twists and turns of the last couple of days is that when a breaking news situation is this fluid, it's really hard to sift through what are well-intentioned early reports that end up being incorrect. And one of the reasons for that is because at this stage, oftentimes the police, which is where a lot of us are getting our information, are not fully up to date or have been misinformed on what the situation is. Last night I was at the scene in Watertown where there was a firefight, and then they apprehended someone who it seems like actually was not one of the suspects. And one thing that really struck me was the amount of confusion on the ground among the different police forces. And one of the added complications in this instance is that you're dealing with a number of different agencies that typically don't interact in this way. So when I was at the scene in Watertown, the primary people on the ground for much of that time were the Boston Police Department. And one of the confusing things there was they simply didn't know the area, and they weren't able to use their smartphones to map it out because they had been instructed to turn them off lest their phones be used to detonate a device. So at this point, I think there's still just such an overwhelming amount of confusion out there.
Fred, I heard one report, and I should say, as NPR has been very responsibly saying all morning, that almost anything that's being reported could be revised. And we're delivering information that is the best information we can as we know it. But some of these things are going to turn out to be wrong, potentially, as apparently the reports earlier that they had been in the country for only about a year, and now people are describing a longer history of living in the Boston area. So one report, Fred, said a person is holed up in a house in Watertown who is believed to be the other brother. Do you have anything on that?
I do not. You know, it wouldn't completely surprise me, but it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they were surrounding a house and believed the suspect to be present there.
That would contradict most of the rest of what we're hearing, though, that there's a massive manhunt underway.
Well, right. So, but I think they, you know, again, they have been going house to house within a certain neighborhood within Watertown. They've been going to places repeatedly. I'm sure that they've thought themselves close, perhaps multiple times. Obviously, I'm speculating, and mm-hmm. we shouldn't do that. But it is the nature of a manhunt that's just how it plays out, I would suspect. I mean, things will take a while to get from the neighborhood a half mile away or closer to us to where I'm now sitting. They'll be filtered, obviously, through state and local and federal officials. You know, who knows what they know right now.
And there was a third person, that is, in addition to the two brothers, one of the brothers now killed, the other not yet taken into custody or killed if that turns out to be necessary, but a third person taken into custody who police were describing, Seth, if you've been following this, as somebody who might be an accomplice, though they're not describing him as a suspect. What does that language tell you?
One thing that was interesting is, so at the scene in Watertown last night, there was this gun battle where one of the suspects was killed. And then when I arrived there, there was an intense effort to remove someone from a car, a lot of screaming, telling him to first get his hands in the air, then lift up his shirt. Eventually they asked asked him to remove his underwear and get on the ground. He was taken and questioned by the FBI and then moved into a patrol car. And at one point, the police spokesperson at the scene said that two of the suspects had been apprehended, meaning the one that died a little bit after 1:30 in the morning, and then this second person. He then, about an hour later, came and revised that and said, at this point, we can only confirm that one suspect has been detained, and at that point, they weren't confirming that he had died. And it seemed at that point that this person might have just literally been someone who was in a very wrong place at the very wrong time. Another confusing factor here is there were conflicting reports about what happened to the person whose car was carjacked. So he was, for some period of time, kept as a hostage, and then the initial reports were that he was let out at a gas station along Memorial Drive in Cambridge, and then later reports were that he might have been this person who was detained on the scene in Watertown. So I would not be surprised if it turned out that there actually was no third accomplice, but I also wouldn't be surprised if there actually was. I think at this point, you know, the police are trying to piece this together the same way the media is.
Also joining us now is Jessica Stern, a fellow at the FXB Center for Health and Human Rights at the Harvard School of Public Health, served in the Clinton administration on President Clinton's National Security Council in the 1990s. Professor Stern, welcome back to WNYC. What aspect of this are you following most closely right now?
Well, since I live right near Watertown, it's quite close to home. I'm both interested because it's my town, and also because of the story, of course. You know, it's too early for us to draw any conclusions whatsoever, but from what we've heard so far, one could imagine that these are kids who somehow found an identity with the jihadi movement, perhaps identifying with people in Chechnya or around the world who felt humiliated or marginalized as Muslims. You know, it's not about a third of those who attempt to carry out pro-jihadi attacks in the U.S. are converts, so they don't necessarily have to have any kind of ethnic identity with those with whom they identify. But my mind went very quickly to the time I spent in the Darul Uloom Haqqaniyah Madrasa, which is in Pakistan near Afghanistan, and my surprise at finding a couple of Chechens there who were getting trained, schooled. That's the madrasa that created the Taliban and the Haqqani network. So we do see people from Russia, from the south especially, and from Central Asia, feeling sympathetic to the global jihad.
What's it like in the city right now with the lockdown going on? Seth, let me ask you that. I guess as a journalist, you might feel that you're going particularly stir crazy, though you're obviously doing a lot of reporting from where you are. Have you ever seen anything like this? And what's your sense?
Yeah, I'm actually now back in my home in Brookline, which is just a couple miles away from Watertown. But on September 11th, I was living in downtown Manhattan on 11th Street, and the situation here right now feels eerily reminiscent of that. There are not a lot of cars on the road, and what cars there are tend to have blue flashing lights and be traveling very fast. The entire public transportation system has been shut down. Stores are closed. Schools are closed. And in those ways, it actually it feels more shut down than it did immediately on September 11th and the days after September 11th. But it does have that kind of feel. And it's something that I haven't experienced at any other time in my life, except for right around September 11th.
Professor Stern, to your knowledge, is there much of a Chechenian immigrant community in the Boston area?
No, I'm not aware of that.
Seth, any knowledge that you've had of that before today?
No, it's not something that I've reported on or know anything about. There are a number of different minority communities that are fairly well established in Boston, the greater Boston area, and I am not aware of a Chechen community.
All right. Fred, are they telling you at the Media Hub when they're going to tell you anything else specific? Because we're going to break away from the coverage now and do some other things. And we're going to come back when there's news to talk about. So what are they telling you in terms of what's anticipated?
Yeah, no, we haven't really had any, pre-briefing heads up for quite a while. So where people are sort of circling and wondering a little bit what their next step should be. They're doing a lot of, reporting remotely and taking feeds from colleagues elsewhere and thinking about going on to the next stop, whether that's in Cambridge or someplace else nearby.
And Professor Stern, before you go, I just want to get your take as a former national security official on the latest reporting on the individuals allegedly involved that I mentioned on the air just before you joined us. And I don't know if you've heard these reports yet from the AP, but it says the men's uncle, Ruslan Tsarny of Montgomery Village, Maryland, told the Associated Press that the brothers traveled here together from the Russian region near Chechnya. Jokar was registered as a student at the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth, and that's new information just now that he's identified as a student at UMass Dartmouth. That campus has been closed down, along with other colleges around the Boston area, by the way. And their father, Anzor Tsarnaev, said in a telephone interview with the AP from the Russian city of Makhachkala that his younger son, Jokar, is, quote, a true angel. Jokar is a second-year medical student in the U.S. He is such an intelligent boy. We expected him to come on holidays here. And also that the city of Cambridge announced 2 years ago that it had awarded a $2,500 scholarship to Jokar, who was listed then as a senior at Cambridge Ridge and Latin School, a highly regarded public school. There's anything there connect to anything that you're familiar with, either with a place in Russia or the kind of education that he was getting? Does anything there surprise you, not surprise you, connect with anything you already know?
Well, what we see with young people who join what they believe to be a jihad when they're from the West and when they're immigrants, it's often the case that they have a confused identity, that they really don't feel totally Western, but they also obviously don't feel like a citizen of their original country. There's often a rift between the children and the parents, where the parents, if they're living in this country, will often not speak the language, and the children do speak the language. The parents don't understand their children's lives. The children can find a new identity on the internet, often on the internet, that may or may not be connected with their home country in any way. It can be quite antithetical to the values of the parents. We've seen that in in Europe as well as the United States.
We've seen frequently that terrorists, if these suspects, one alive, one dead now, turn out to be terrorists, that they're often quite educated and not from desperate situations.
That's right. It is very confusing. The terrorists that come out of the West to join the jihadi movement, yes, they're often quite well educated, sometimes quite privileged, and yet they identify more with the oppressed somewhere in the world than they do with their neighbors. And their neighbors may have absolutely no idea that the kids have this secret identification with the oppressed, whoever they are.
Jessica Stern, Fred Mogul, Seth Mnookin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we will keep covering the developments in Boston as the news warrants, but we will also talk about some other things, and New York City Comptroller John Liu joins us in just a minute. We think that the news conference has just begun in Boston. We're getting an audio feed. Let's go and listen and see what's going on.
Carjacked. I believe it was just in their possession. I don't know if they owned it or what have you, but that's what's here.
There were reports last night about this SUV, this SUV being stolen. That was false?
That was false.
Was someone in it or was it abandoned? How'd you find it?
The CRV was abandoned.
Was there anything in it?
I can't discuss that at this time. The question was that a state police truck was stolen last night as part of this. That was false.
Who does the CRV belong to?
I don't know the answer to that.
What's going on now?
The governor and the mayor are being briefed by the commanders of the various agencies, and we expect that they'll be briefing you soon. We also have some police activity down the street. I don't know if you can see it from here. There was initial report of a possible suspect. It is not suspect number two. It is not white hat. They're clear on that scene. So.
Is it a third suspect?
No.
Is there a suspect at all? Not a suspect.
Not a suspect in this. They're probably. I'm not sure what drew their attention to the person. Or if they're running him in any way, his background.
Can you spell your name?
David Procopio, P as in Peter, R-O-C-O-P-I-O, spokesperson, Massachusetts State Police. And I think we'll leave the rest for the briefing. The staging area is in the Arsenal Mall parking lot.
And is that for the entire investigation?
Yes, it is. Okay, thank you.
All right, amid some confusion, it appeared to be a Boston Police Department official who is briefing reporters there. And the upshot of that, I think, is that the manhunt is continuing. They do not have the second suspect pigeonholed anywhere. And there is no third suspect. That was one interesting piece of news, because there was earlier an individual taken into custody who police were describing as a possible accomplice, though they would not characterize him as a suspect, possible accomplice, though not a suspect, whatever that means. And that statement seemed to indicate that that person is not a suspect in the Boston Marathon bombings. Brian Lehrer on WNYC will continue in a minute. WNYC, and we will keep covering the developments in Boston this hour as the news warrants. and also talk about some other things. So assuming that you're already up to date on the basics, that one of the two suspects was killed in a shootout, and it wasn't just a shootout. There were grenades involved, apparently, and other things with police overnight. And the other brother, these 19 and 21-year-old brothers, the other brother still at large, and this massive manhunt going on, lockdown of the entire Boston metropolitan area, everybody being told to stay in their homes. You've probably heard all of that earlier, and that the two brothers are of Chechen background, immigrants to the United States from a region of Chechnya or near Chechnya that also has a strong jihadist-leaning insurgency, which doesn't certainly close the deal on that, but raises questions about it, to be sure. So we are expecting another briefing from officials in Boston coming up, and we will bring that to you when it occurs. And we will be going back to Boston in any case in a little while and talking to guests there. And we're also going to open up the phones for anybody from Boston to talk about the experience of lockdown. Imagine if the whole New York City metropolitan area was locked down. Imagine if the governor, as the governor of Massachusetts did earlier this morning, went on television and said, everybody in New York, or the governor of New Jersey, everybody in New Jersey, stay in your homes. Imagine that. So for the whole Boston metro area, it is lockdown because the suspect on the loose is considered armed and so dangerous, and they don't know where he is. So we will go back and talk about that, but we will also take your calls. So if anybody in the Boston area is listening right now, or those of you who have friends and relatives in the Boston area, call up, text, IM, whatever you do to get in touch with your people in Boston, and tell them to call the show in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and we're going to take their calls on what lockdown is like. All right? So spread the word. 212-433-WNYC is the number you should be giving out, 212-433-9692. And we'll do that in a little while, as well as, of course, follow any developments in the manhunt. Coming up, we're going to go back to Boston and get the latest. And we also invite anybody who's on lockdown in Boston right now to call in and talk about the experience. Who would have guessed that a metropolitan area would be on complete lockdown? Well, that's the case because of this manhunt right now. If you're listening in Boston, or if you know someone in Boston who you want to call up, or text, or send them a direct message, or whatever, to suggest that they call the show and describe their experiences, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 is the number, and WNYC's Fred Mogul is covering the developments up there, and we'll talk to him in a minute. On WNYC. We'll go back to Boston now and talk to WNYC's Fred Mogul, who's covering the latest developments. And we'll take calls, especially from anybody in the Boston area. And I see we are getting some calls from people who are on lockdown. What are you doing during your day, or at least so far your morning of lockdown? And how closely are you following investigation events? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. WNYC's Fred Mogul is still at the media tent in Watertown, Mass. Fred?
Yes, we're in the parking lot of the Watertown Mall. It's too big a throng here to fit under a tent. It's several dozen reporters. We're anticipating the Mayor Menino to come address us soon, perhaps the Governor Deval Patrick as well. So hopefully within a short time, we'll have a lot more to tell you that's new, or at least some few things that are new, rather than kind of repeating what we've all known for a little while, with tiny little rumors and incremental clarifications.
Are you getting any clarification on the status of the manhunt, if they know where the suspect is, in any rough geographical sense?
No, my sense is that they're still very much focused on Watertown. There are a couple areas, a couple particular houses that they were intensely focused on, and you and I discussed this at the very beginning of your show, a couple residences that they've converged on, but they've since cleared those. They did find one person of interest, but not to this case. So they're, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the status of the manhunt is in the immediate vicinity here in Watertown or in Cambridge or elsewhere in the area.
Describe Watertown and why Watertown, which is just outside Boston, became the focal point here.
Well, this is apparently where the suspects fled to in a car that they had stolen. And they started earlier last night in Cambridge, and this is how they came up Memorial Drive and into this area, and that's where the standoff was. So there isn't, as far as I can tell, seem to be any sort of major logistical or cultural reason why it happened here. It's just where they were fleeing to on their way to get out of Cambridge.
And I guess we can conclude, if nothing else, that the suspects had expensive tastes in cars because they reportedly hijacked a Mercedes SUV, not just any SUV.
Right. Well, that's true. Although there are a couple different cars that have been discussed. So there was a CRV vehicle, an SUV, that was also either taken. It's actually not clear whether it was taken or in whose possession, but it was abandoned elsewhere in the area. So these are little details we're clearing up little by little.
All right. Stay there, Fred. We're going to hear from some people in lockdown right now. Ben in Franklin, Massachusetts, near Watertown. Ben, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Just got a call from friends in New York. And we were talking about my parents are in Watertown, and I'm not far from Watertown. And we were talking about the terrorists and, you know, the jihadists, and why would somebody need an AR-15 after yesterday's vote? And we were changing information, me and friends in New York, that this would be a scenario where one would need an AR-15.
So you would want to have something like that in case the guy confronted you.
Well, in case my parents had somebody with an explosive vest and a grenade in front of their front yard, all of a sudden doesn't sound kooky anymore.
Ben, I hear you. Thank you very much. Our next caller is actually, I guess we called her, Alicia Abbott, a former WNYC producer. In fact, produced as a per diem this program from time to time in past years. And Alicia, hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
I live in Cambridge, right by the Watertown border. So I spent a lot of this morning listening to sirens before I woke up, thinking, I thought I left New York. What's going on with all the sirens? And not really realizing what was in progress.
And what's it like on lockdown right now?
It's a little tense. This is also a week when Cambridge schools are out, so all the kids are home all week. And I had been trying hard to keep the news from my 7-year-old daughter, but it was very hard to do. I kept the TV off, I kept the radio off, but at one point a friend was calling to check in on me because she knows how close I am to Watertown, and my daughter actually got on the extension and listened in and told me she knew what was going on. And I realized that if I didn't tell her more information, she was actually making up scarier versions than what was actually happening.
Alicia, thank you very much. Good to hear your voice. And yes, that's a issue for lots of people. If you have little kids around, remember that they do have ears and they are paying attention and they can conjure up whatever they want. Jeffrey in Brighton. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hey,
what's going on lockdown?
We're just waiting to be able to do whatever they tell us to do. We're just staying in a motel and met some people who were here to visit colleges, and kids kind of just sitting there very quiet.
Oh, boy. So you don't even live there. You're passing through in a motel, and you're kind of stuck in a motel room.
Well, I'm basically, I mean, we're not allowed to really leave, drive, or go anywhere. And I'm supposed to perform a concert up here Sunday afternoon with Pro Art Chamber Orchestras. And so we're just canceled rehearsal today, canceled the radio show, canceled a lot of things, and we're just, you know, hoping everybody is safe out there and that the those who know what to do, do it safely and don't get hurt any further. And just hope for a positive outcome so that everybody can move on.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Good luck. Hope the lockdown lists in time for you to play your concert. We did also get word, by the way, that the Boston Bruins skate around. Their morning practice has been canceled, so even they're on lockdown, as is Kate in Cambridge. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Brian.
So what's going on?
Just waiting by the TV. We're locked down at our place in Cambridge. We live right between Harvard and MIT. Just waiting to hear news of what we can do next. We're kind of frozen.
And how are you passing the time?
Just glued to the TV, just, you know, waiting for news that it's safe. It's a beautiful day outside, but we're holed up in our apartment.
I heard you were near the – you were watching the marathon.
Yes, we were at the time the bombs went off, we were at mile 24 over in Coolidge Corner in Boston. Earlier in the day, we had been very close to the finish line, actually. So we're really grateful that we had changed locations. We were kind of watching, you know, the people finishing more around the four-hour mark, the newer runners, and that's always exciting. And nobody seemed to know what was going on when the bombs went off. We started to hear sirens and see police officers flee toward downtown, but everyone just kept running. It was very surreal.
I guess. Kate, thank you. WNYC's Fred Mogul, 15 seconds. What are you hearing about when the governor or the FBI or anyone will give you real details about the state of the investigation and the manhunt?
Well, as the nature of these things, you know, there's a lot of false alarms. It was to be 5 minutes and 10 minutes and 10 minutes and half an hour. So, you know, who knows? It's really anyone's guess. And last time they came out, there was some reasonably big news that they had this lockdown citywide instead of just a handful of areas.
That was earlier this morning around 8 o'clock. And, Fred, thanks very much. We'll keep checking back with you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.